From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 18th day of March 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois. He's with AgMarket.net. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenura from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way today, we'll hear a report from deep southern Illinois about vaccines and farm workers. Dana Cronin, agricultural reporter here at the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and with the home station, WILL AM 580, and Illinois Public Media, along with Illinois Newsroom, has the details, and we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn at $5.46.5 today, 11.5 lower. July down 12.25 at $5.30.25. And December corn, $4.68 down 7.5 cents. The soybeans at $13.92.25 down 25.5 in the May. November at $12.06.25, 29.25 lower. The bean meal down $6.70. Bean oil $1.08 lower for the day. This is willag.org. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago. It's been rainy and ugly outside today, and the same thing kind of happened in Chicago. What tipped the scales? Was it corn or soybeans, Matt?
Well, definitely an ugly day on the board. So, yeah, I think whenever you come in here this week and you post these huge Chinese sales again, it reminds you, you know, of late January whenever we came in and posted huge sales. Actually, we started strong each one of those mornings, you know, and then gave back all the gains sometimes and then some. You come in this week, you post a million metric tons, 1.1, and then come in again today, almost 700 million tons. I mean, you're talking 700, but regardless, you're talking huge sales. And so the market was excited, in my opinion, but you got to think back, you know, people already knew about these sales. I mean, you saw this bull spreading going on. You saw the buying going on in the front months. And it was obvious that people already knew these sales had happened. Rumors were midweek last week. You know, we'd started here and maybe some of this was going on. But we got verification here today. And then you see what we did as far as giving back the gains. In my opinion, it seemed like beans have been lagging all week. So I'd have to seem that they think that they were the ones that really hurt us today as far as upward momentum.
So buy the rumor and sell the fact in this case. Regardless, that it should underpin the marketplace, and I'm wondering, is there enough support to hold this, or are we at a point where things might begin to turn towards the new crop and really fall apart?
Well, that's a really good question. But I mean, you know, essentially, several things play in there. First of all, part of the weakness right now, in my opinion, is the Western Corn Belt getting a nice drink. Not to mention, you know, most of the Midwest, most of the Corn Belt has had some moisture in here. And so some of the fears of 2012 repeating itself, going in really dry, you know, and then staying dry all year, have kind of gone away. The other thing, Argentina got enough rain. I think that they're stopping the losses. But I think moving forward, you're still going to have to address, you know, an extremely tight carry out as far as soybeans are concerned. We had huge inspections this week. Actually, export sales today on corn were almost a million tons. I mean, that was a welcome surprise. We didn't really think that was going to be the case. We know next week we're probably looking at 3 million ton plus. So as of today, we're looking at about 2.5 billion bushels already spoken for on sales. And the USDA is only at 2.6. So chances are they're going to have to adjust that number. So definitely a lot to happen between now and the end of the month and then that April report. But for me, I don't think this market's over by any stretch. But as I've told you many times, Todd, I definitely want to quantify a worst-case scenario situation given the profit margins we've seen on the table.
Yeah, so what do you do about that in that case? Are you still a willing seller into this marketplace for additional bushels, corn and or soybeans, old or new crop, or are you holding pat somewhere?
Well, you know, the basis has actually been pretty good for us here in the last week. And so we've seen some of the basis levels improve up to a dime in areas. And so, you know, they're still wanting the corn. There's no question. If you sell corn in this area, I know one of the major processors that you and I both know, you know, they're bidding 24 over the May. That's 570 corn. You know, after a crummy day on the market, you can still get 570 corn. I mean, what are we complaining about? And so, you look at new crop, 468 on the board. I mean, that's the best price we could have envisioned for several years straight now. And so I can't scoff at those prices. And then on beans, of course, you're still pushing $14, and then you're looking at new crop over $12. So all those price levels to me are attractive. They're very profitable. And we've got to benchmark ourselves against some of the price levels we've gotten used to over the last few years to keep us honest, because we got to be honest with ourselves. These are still really profitable areas.
And given carryout for corn in the United States, two important facts. The planting season is coming up, although Darrell Good always told us that farmers will get it planted one way or the other. So there might be something there, but not likely as much as maybe as some would put on it. And the other is that it's just really slow start. And it's not about planting in Brazil, but it's about the dry weather that could come in for that second crop, Safrina, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got a third of that crop that went in the ground awfully late. So the dry season is going to creep up on that crop a little bit earlier in the life of the plant than what they would really prefer. And so a lot of your producers down that part of the world, some of the guys I talk to are very concerned, at what might happen if they would turn off hot and dry at the normal time frame even. That's going to really hit them at the wrong time. And so, yeah, I think here in the U.S., kind of alluding to what you started with, here's the thing. Most people are assuming all these prevent plan acres are coming back in. You have to assume that with these profit margins. I mean, there's no question that principal crop planted, total planted acreage should be huge. But at the same time, if you turn off with a really wet spring, there's no doubt in my mind that the market will be reactive to that because of the assumption that has already been made that, we're going to pick up 5, 6, 7 million acres out of prevent plant last year when we were around 9 or 10. So it'd be very interesting to see how this plays out if we stay a little bit wet. My personal opinion, I hope we can get in the field and, and get something done early because it certainly treated us very well from a production standpoint. Even if the markets face, a lot of adversity from this point forward, I think we can make really good money even if marketing on the way down if we have to.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. In today's agricultural news, just a couple of items. First, the U.S. Senate confirmed Katherine Tai as President Biden's pick to lead the U.S. Trade Representative's office. Tai was confirmed by a unanimous 98-0 vote to be USTR. Tai had already won a unanimous voice vote in committee, and it was clear her experience as a House trade staffer and bipartisanship would cement her easy Senate confirmation. Senate Finance Chair Ron Wyden called Tai a terrific person for U.S. Trade Representative.
She led crackdowns against China's trade cheating and job ripoffs. As the top trade staffer on the Ways and Means Committee, she was at the forefront to improve the new NAFTA. She's already got a long track record of achieving wins for America's workers, businesses, farmers, and ranchers.
And here's how Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell sees it.
Katherine Tai is just the kind of qualified and mainstream person who is positioned to serve President Biden and the country quite well. I look forward to working with Ms. Tai to embrace trade and push back on abusive practices from China and other anti-competitive countries.
Tai committed to enforcing the China Phase 1 trade deal and the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which are keys for U.S. agriculture. Chairman Wyden says Tai also agreed to be more open with lawmakers on trade issues.
Ms. Tai has committed to the Finance Committee that she will work to bring more transparency to trade policy. I know that Ms. Tai will continue to raise the bar for that transparency and communications with the Congress, because she has been on our side of policy making, and she's already proved that that kind of openness and accountability is a key priority for her.
But most of all, Wyden says Tai is committed to protecting and expanding high-skilled, high-wage jobs for American workers through enforcement of existing trade deals and new ones. And finally today, this news about CSP contracts from the United States Department of Agriculture. USDA has announced some expiring contracts under its Conservation Stewardship Program can apply for renewal by the end of March. USDA's Rod Bain has more with Natural Resources Conservation Service Deputy Chief Jimmy Bramblett.
Over 11,000 contracts under the Agriculture Department's Conservation Stewardship Program are set to expire at year's end. However, as Natural Resources Conservation Service Deputy Chief Jimmy Bramblett notes,
normally the contract period is originally for 5 years, and there's authorization in the Farm Bill to renew those contracts for another 5 years.
However, to renew those contracts,
we're asking our clients that are working with us in those situations to visit our field offices by March the 31st.
Not only that, but the deputy chief explains under the 2018 Farm Bill, this new CSP contract renewal process is also a competitive one. More information about CSP and contract renewals are available at local NRCS field offices or online at www.nrcs.usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Todd Gleason here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, people working in agriculture across the whole of the nation have been prioritized to receive the COVID-19 vaccine, and that includes temporary farm workers. In fact, more than half of all farm workers hired in the United States are from Mexico, here on temporary work visas. Now, some states are prioritizing these workers in their vaccine rollout plans, and they're already getting shots into arms. Dana Cronin reports from deep southern Illinois.
White vans carrying small groups of farm workers drive up periodically to the parish hall at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Cobden, Illinois, dropping off groups of men who have recently arrived from Mexico. Many of them will be here until October on temporary agricultural work visas. And on only their third day here, they're getting vaccinated. 34-year-old Jorge Feria just arrived from Oaxaca, Mexico. Moments after receiving his shot, he felt relieved.
We have the fortune to come work through a visa and have a government that cares about the people that come to work in the fields. We are very grateful.
He says if he had stayed in Mexico, he wouldn't be vaccinated. In fact, he doesn't know anyone in Mexico who has yet gotten the shot. It's a big deal for many of these workers. Farm workers have been hit particularly hard by the pandemic. According to researchers at Purdue University, in the U.S. alone, it's estimated that hundreds of thousands of agricultural workers have tested positive for the virus, and thousands have died.
Relax your arm.
Jose Martinez rolls up the sleeve of his blue tie-dye t-shirt in preparation for the shot.
Nothing hard. Yeah.
Martinez, who's originally from Mexico, now lives in Illinois year-round, working as a forklift operator at a farm. He says most of his family also works on farms, and almost all are vaccinated. His parents, though, remain in Mexico.
Todavía no.
They're not vaccinated yet, because in Mexico, it's really hard to get.
Carlos Leonardo Magis Rodriguez teaches medicine at the National Autonomous University of Mexico.
The real problem is that we don't have enough vaccines.
He says the supply issues mean that most Mexican residents, even healthcare workers, aren't yet vaccinated. Mexico's vaccine distribution plan is age-based, and Magis Rodriguez says he expects 20 to 30-year-olds won't become eligible until maybe next January, meaning many of the farm workers getting their shots in the U.S. now will likely be nearly a full year ahead of their peers back home. Some farm workers say many of their friends and family members are afraid to get vaccinated after hearing false information and conspiracy theories.
El gobierno está en contra de la gente.
That the government is against the people and that they're putting the virus in our bodies.
Eleazar Chavez also recently arrived from Oaxaca on a work visa. The night before getting vaccinated, he attended an informational session put on by a local health clinic. Carla Grathler ran that Q&A session. She says many workers come in both concerned and unprepared for the vaccine, and it's important to dispel myths right away with accurate information about vaccines.
You know, how they work in the body, what kinds of vaccines we have in the market, what kind of vaccines do we want to receive today, and then what to expect after receiving the vaccine. So they know, they can identify, okay, I have fever, I have chills, okay, well, don't get alarmed. My body is responding to the vaccine.
After some initial hesitation, Grathler says all 22 of the most recently arrived farm workers got their vaccine shots. I'm Dana Cronin, Illinois Newsroom.
This story was co-reported with Illinois Newsroom's Christine Herman. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenera. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good rainy afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Great being here. And yeah, it doesn't get a lot more soggy than the way it is today, that's for sure.
Yeah, we are truly almost socked in. It's unbelievable, given the dry conditions that we have had over the last several months, that things have changed. I guess that's part of the stormy weather patterns that come with spring. Will they continue across the Midwest?
Well, it certainly looks like it will, because there's a number of systems that are still lingering to the west, and those will continue to move through over the next couple of weeks. So we think that the stormy period that we've been in for the last 7 days is essentially going to continue into April. So the drought story is coming to an end for a lot of the central U.S., and it's now moving into a bit of a wetness story. We will start to plant soybeans in the southern U.S., in about 1 to 2 weeks. And so this is not ideally timed for that, but as long as we receive some nice breaks between rains, things will turn out to be okay. But the thing we have to keep in mind is that after the rain that we're dealing with today moves out, there is another system that moves through a few days from now, and then there's another one after that. So two systems move through next week. And because of that, we think that most areas are going to turn wetter, or at least stay as wet as they are now, as they move into the end of the month.
Yeah, so subsoil moisture levels coming back up, I take it, across a large part of the growing regions in the United States?
I would agree, especially since some of the heaviest rain today is falling on some of the driest areas of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. But keep in mind that the dryness story goes all the way back into last August, so even one rain isn't going to totally recharge everything. But the larger point is that it looks like we're in a stormier period, and then it's going to continue for at least a couple more weeks.
However, the northern plains, parts of North Dakota, and the Canadian prairies remain dry.
Well, you're right, and that's because most of these systems are going to pass to the south and east of North Dakota. That's going to leave North Dakota, where drought is very impressive at the moment, pretty dry. And if you move to the north and get into the Canada prairies, there's not a whole lot more to talk about except the same thing, which is that it's been pretty dry. There's a major drought in place, and most of the rains and snows over the next couple of weeks are going to miss to the south and east. Now, you do need to remember that North Dakota and the Canada prairies are typically pretty dry in March, and they're also pretty dry in April. It's not until we get into May, and then especially June, when things start to turn a lot wetter. So to break out of a drought at this time of the year is fairly difficult to do just because of the way their climate works. But we think that this is a potential problem for the spring wheat crop. You can't have a major drought in place in the spring and then not have a whole lot of rain coming up in the near term. And with planting season only about 4 to 8 weeks out, you're going to need to see rain show up at some point. So that is certainly a risk for this year's North America crop. And that would be that the spring wheat yields need to be monitored, because not only is there that drought in place now, there's not much rain on the horizon, and there is a weakening La Nina in place, and that does connect to poor yields on occasion, especially in Canada.
Have you been watching closely? I know you have, the soybean crop in Argentina and its condition throughout the growing season. How do you think it will end?
Well, we've certainly been watching that. That's kind of one of the main features of what the T-Storm Weather Service is focusing on Argentina and Brazil corn and soybean yields at this time of the year. But we do have concerns there, because if you recall, Argentina was pretty dry at the start of the growing season. Then they started to receive decent rainfall at the end of December and through the end of January. So basically about 4 to 6 weeks with good rains right after the soybean crop was planted, and that was pretty well timed to get the soybeans going. Since then, there's not been much rain. It's been very dry since February 1st, and even though it rained a few days ago and that helped to alleviate the situation a little bit, it didn't wipe out the coverage of 30-day or 60-day dryness. And that's telling us that we need a lot more rain, and we probably need it pretty soon, because keep in mind, it's only a few days out until the first day of autumn begins in the southern hemisphere. And it's also around day 105 to 110 since half of soybeans were planted in Argentina. And so there is a limit as to how long you can go before you need the rains to show up and it's time to harvest. And we think we're approaching that now. There are a few more rains that'll occur over the next week or two, but we don't think they're going to be big drought busters. And we also think that every day that goes by from today forward, the importance of that rain diminishes. So it's going to be a story that we need to monitor. And at this point, it's probably just going to be one where we'll have to see what producers are pulling out of the fields in a month or so.
Before I let you go, how much concern should there be about safrinha or second crop corn in Mato Grosso and parts of Brazil?
Well, right now there's not much to worry about, and that's because the crop is still being planted and has been very wet. In fact, I would argue that the last 24 hours were one of the wettest days of the entire year so far in Mato Grosso, which is where a lot of that corn is produced. Now, it has been a challenging period simply because we have been planting corn pretty late, and that's more a function of how late soybeans were planted because of a drought back in October and November. But now the soybeans are being pulled out of the ground, the corn is being planted, and we're almost completing the corn planting situation in Mato Grosso. So at the moment, everything is fine. The problem that we might face going forward is that the climate of central Brazil, where a lot of this corn is being planted and is now waiting to get a little bit older and grow, is just sitting there waiting. And the problem is that at the same time that that's happening, their climate is turning drier. Every week that we go forward, they receive less and less rain from a climatological standpoint. And by the time you get into the middle of May, which is about 8 weeks from now, they don't get much rain at all. In fact, it would not be surprising to receive no rain from mid-May all the way into September. That's how dry it is. They get dumped on with 12, 13, 14 inches of rain per month around January into February. But then on the other side of it, they get almost no rain in the middle of their winter, which is June, July, and August. And so that transition is underway now. And if we have a fast transition to that dry period, that's a big problem because corn is not going to be pollinated until we get into the end of April and more than likely into the middle of May. And so it's kind of a game here we're going to be playing where we're running out of rainfall chances because of the climate, and then we need an unusual situation to happen in 4 to 6 weeks from now where maybe we would get an unusual rainfall despite the drying climate. It's just a story that we need to watch, and it's certainly a risk to the corn crop in Brazil.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, sounds great, and we'll talk again soon.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.